is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 5th, 2020. Back in Bristol, Taylor Schwenk, Troy Farkas. I'm Buster Olney. I'm in the lobby of our hotel down here in Tampa. We have a big staff meeting here today. So in the background, you're going to hear the soothing sounds of some elevator music. We apologize for that, but maybe enjoy that. Giants and Dodgers, nothing elevator music about that. Although it's spring training, it got heated in their exhibition game last night. Justin Turner was hit on the left hand by a pitch. And then when Rob Brantley came to the plate for his next plate appearance, this is what happened.
Brantley gets plunked, so he'll head down to first. Two outs and a man aboard. Dodgers up 2-0 in the top of the second. 1-2. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Kershaw, another good breaking ball. And he got Sanchez to swing and miss. Three strikeouts in the inning. A hit batsman. Four strikeouts in the game for Clayton Kershaw. And now he comes over to bark at somebody with the Giants. And Tom Woodring, the home plate umpire, steps in the middle and tells Clayton to go to the dugout. So it's a spring training game, but Dodgers-Giants, you never know. Apparently third base coach Ron Woltus said something to Clayton Kershaw, perhaps thinking that he hit Brantley on purpose, and then Kershaw says, hey, what did you say? And Woltus kept on going to the dugout with his back to Kershaw. But Woltus certainly is a grizzled veteran of the Dodgers-Giants rivalry. Yeah. Both dugouts have been worn.
And after Kershaw back to the dugout, all four umpires had a huddle.
Tim Neverett, Rick Monday on the Dodgers radio network describing that little dust-up, a classic baseball dust-up, because no punches were actually thrown. According to sources, Red Sox ace Chris Sale is not expected to undergo Tommy John surgery yet. He is being examined. The Red Sox haven't announced what's going to happen, but it looks like he's going to go through some treatment with the hope that he can avoid Tommy John surgery. Aaron Judge of the Yankees continues to undergo extensive testing. Brian Cashman, their general manager, met with reporters last night, and he said, quote, he is obviously going through a series of tests. It's not like one or two. It's a number approaching 7 to 10 total. The Major League Baseball Players Association met with the Yankees players yesterday, and afterward, Zach Britton, New York's reliever, told reporters that Major League Baseball has proposed banning player access to video during games. Britton feels like that's just too extensive. It's All Access Week for ESPN, and Pete Alonso of the Mets did a ride-along with Tim Kirkchin. Pete Alonso at the wheel. Give a listen.
I've never driven with a polar bear before.
Alrighty.
It's pretty impressive.
What is?
Seeing a polar bear drive a car. Pete, how much has your life changed from a last year at this time to right now?
I mean, it's changed exponentially. I mean, it's still taking time to get used to. But I think that for me, it's like I'm just so gracious for the change, because for me, my lifelong goal and dream was to become a big leaguer and be a successful big leaguer. And everything that came with it, especially in New York, everything's just been a blessing. Do you want anything?
No, thank you.
You sure?
I've never had a cup of coffee. It's a true story.
Wow. Can I get a venti chai latte?
I just signed a 3-year deal. Oh. I'm paying for coffee.
Well, congratulations.
There you go. Not the same 3-year deal you're going to sign, by the way. Never mind. All right. So back to your fame or whatever we're going to call it. Are you comfortable with it that a lot of people now know who you are?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, for me, it's in New York, the city. I mean, it's such a baseball town and sports town, I guess, yeah, you could call it that.
Right.
And the amount of exposure and, yeah.
But well, this was great fun.
Good.
My first ride ever with a polar bear.
Awesome.
You're really good.
Yeah, thank you.
Brandon Nimmo of the Mets was on with Golic and Wingo and talked about players getting mic'd up in this All Access Week.
You know, it is. It's great for us as well. You know, a lot of people don't understand the ins and outs of the baseball game as it's going on and how much preparation does go into those at-bats and what you're thinking about during that time. And, you know, hey, it's beneficial for me to listen to those guys too, because baseball is a game of learning. It's a game of failure. And so you figure out how other people think and what works for them. And, you know, that light bulb might go off for you as well and might get you on a nice streak going ahead. So I like to listen to it as well. I like to see what other people are thinking. I think it brings a lot of insight into the game.
Today we'll have a preview of the National League West. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about TD Ameritrade. In baseball, there are a lot of tough decisions, like which pitch to throw on a 3-2 count, when to tap the bullpen, and, of course, ketchup or mustard. The folks at TD Ameritrade know just how crucial every decision can be. That's why their team of experts are available to help you weigh the risks and potential rewards so you can understand the ins and outs of your trade. So the next time you have a big idea for a trade, get a strategy gut check and be ready for your next at bat. Visit TDAmeritrade.com/baseball tonight to get started. That's TDAmeritrade.com/baseball tonight. TD Ameritrade, where smart investors get smarter. Nick Pecoro covers the Arizona Diamondbacks for the Arizona Republic. And Nick, we have to start with this. What's the impact of Madison Bumgarner so far?
Well, other than finding out that, that he's been secretly calf roping under a fake identity, it's been a relatively quiet spring for him. He hasn't pitched yet. He's supposed to do that here today. He hasn't addressed the rodeo thing outside of the story in The Athletic in which it originally broke. I don't get the sense he's super happy that it happened. It does kind of lend it creates a little bit of a topic around here, you know, just whether he's going to continue doing it. You know, whether the Diamondbacks mind, you know, exactly where they stand, they've been kind of cagey on it. So, you know, that's an interesting topic as far as the pitching and stuff goes. I'm curious to see. He seems open to making some adjustments. He seems open to analytics. I think he recognizes that he might be entering a little bit of a different stage of his career and might need to kind of reinvent himself a little bit. So, that'll be an interesting thing to watch, just to see how different, if he's all that different at all from the pitcher we saw all those years in San Francisco.
I remember talking with Diamondbacks people at the time they acquired Bumgarner, and it seemed like they landed him with a plan in mind on how to help him. What's your sense of what all that's about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably just a little bit of a different pitch mix. I don't know all the specifics, and it's probably one of those things they're not really going to obviously telegraph until, we are actually see the way he's pitching in games. But I mean, I think he's got more to his repertoire than just the fastball and the cutter. That's what it seems to me that they believe. And then maybe that means using his breaking ball a little bit more, using his changeup a little bit more. I'm not sure if it means, different, pitch sequencing or using his fastball in different locations, but those are things to watch.
In your mind, who's a linchpin player on this roster if the Diamondbacks are going to contend for a playoff spot?
Well, I mean, I guess the guy that immediately comes to mind is Ketel Marte, just assuming that he can be that guy that he was last year. But probably beyond him, I think Zach Gallen is probably the person that stands out the most to me. We saw in 15 starts last season, split between the Marlins and here, just how good he can be. If he's really that good and he's really a frontline starting pitcher over a full season, that really changes a lot of things in this rotation. Obviously there's some questions about, Luke Weaver's health, coming off of the elbow problems last year. Mike Leake has a fractured left hand, so he's still able to get ready for the season, but a little question about that, and Bumgarner, like we mentioned, is he, going to be able to get back to being that number one starter he was before? We'll see. But if Zach Gallen is the guy that he was for half a season last year, I think that eases the pressure on everybody else.
Give me the name of a minor league player that you think could dent the big leagues this year.
Well, Dalton Varsho, I guess, is the first guy that comes to mind. He's a catching prospect, has hit everywhere he's gone. He had a 900 OPS last year in AA, led the Southern League. But he also saw time in center field. He's a really unique player. He stole 21 bases last year, runs really well for a catcher, and apparently held his own in center field late in the season and in the playoffs there in AA. They're going to get him some time in left field and right field and in center this spring. So, you kind of look at the Diamondbacks outfield depth. It's not the deepest, And so I think there's an opportunity, or there's the potential for him to impact the big league roster at some point. You know, if guys are struggling or if there's an injury, he could, you know, come up there. He could come up behind the plate. They've even talked in the past, about maybe getting him ground balls at second base. So, I mean, he's a really interesting player. And like I said, he's hit everywhere he's gone. So that's really going to be his calling card.
Describe the work, in your opinion, that Mike Hazen has done with his staff since taking over baseball operations.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive, obviously. I mean, he's managed to turn what was one of the worst farm systems in baseball to one of the better farm systems in baseball in just a few years. And he's done it while really keeping together a competitive team, a team that's played meaningful baseball late into September. I mean, they've only made the playoffs once, so it's not like he hasn't overseen a team that's just been dominant in the regular season while he's done that. But, you know, he's managed to avoid the total teardown that, you know, nobody ever wants to go through that. No fan base wants to go through that. I think that then, you know, these next couple of years are going to be interesting. Those prospects are making their way up through the system. I think that these next couple of years are really that bridge to that group of players and to the next wave. And once Ketel Marte emerged last year, it kind of signaled that, like, hey, you know, we can keep going. We can keep pushing forward. You know, they traded Paul Goldschmidt. They traded Zach Greinke. And now they've got a couple of guys in Marte and Gallen potentially that can kind of step up and fill those holes while they wait for that prospect inventory to arrive.
Give me a win guesstimate for the 2020 Diamondbacks, and do you think they'll make the postseason?
I don't know. Gosh, I don't know if they're going to make the postseason. I think they're probably a little bit better than last year's team. So, I mean, I guess I'll say 87 wins. I think they're going to be right on the fringes of it if they're not a wild card team. I don't see why they. I mean, I think a lot of stuff would have to go wrong for them to not be, you know, playing games that matter into September.
All right, Nick. Perfect. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem, Buster.
Patrick Saunders covers the Colorado Rockies for the Denver Post. And I guess we got to start with Nolan Arenado, don't we, Patrick? I mean, that was what we talked about all winter. It feels like that his status is going to hover over this team all year.
Yeah, but there's no question about it. It's, you know, even though things have calmed down, that's still under the surface. I still think there's some contentious feelings there between Nolan and GM Jeff Breidich. As far as I know, those have not gone away. I don't see anything evident regarding Nolan in a trade, but if the Rockies play poorly heading through into July toward the trade deadline, I think the rumors are going to start heating up again.
Now, what do you think, how much will he have perhaps to spur those, or is he just deciding, you know what, I'm just going to stand off the side for the year, I'm not going to talk about it anymore, as he stated publicly?
I think that's pretty much it. I still have some conversations with Nolan from time to time about this, but I think he's tried to turn the page as best as possible. Knowing Nolan as I do, he really wants to get out there and just put all that behind him and play baseball right now. And I think Nolan's one of those guys who loves the game enough that he's going to separate that, and I don't think it's going to have any sort of hangover effect for Nolan as the Rockies, enter the bulk of spring training and get into the regular season.
As you and I have talked about many times, one of the greatest challenges, annual challenge for the Rockies really, is maintaining pitching. Where are they with Kyle Freeland and some of the key members of their bullpen?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's the million-dollar question for the Rockies every year. You know, Kyle seems very confident. He's revamped his delivery a little bit. He's made some adjustments. The Rockies seem ultra confident. But until he goes out there and does it, we won't know. The bullpen, it's a state of flux for sure. The Rockies insist that Wade Davis, despite his just horrendous numbers last year, is their incumbent closer. Now, I think Scott Obert, my personal opinion, I think Scott Obert probably should be their ninth inning guy. They have some other young guys, Jairo Diaz, Carlos Estevez, who are kind of up and coming. I think that Brian Shaw and Jake McGee, two of the more high-paid leftovers, if you will, in the bullpen, I think they're going to have reduced roles this year. But there's no question, if the Rockies want to do anything well, they've got to get bounced back from Kyle Freeland. They've got to get some decent help at the back end of the rotation. And they have to get really good performances from Aaron Marquez and John Gray.
Give me the name of a young player who you think could manifest, a minor leaguer who could manifest at the big league level this year.
Well, he made his debut last year, Buster, but I think Sam Hilliard, the outfielder, he has a chance to break out this year. He's big, he's strong, he's very fast. He hits for power. His strikeout rate's a little too high, but he has a real chance, especially with the 26-man roster this year, to provide the outfield with a little more oomph. And he's a really good fielder with a decent arm as well.
Now, you touched on the tension with Jeff Breidich, their general manager. How big of a year is this for Jeff and for manager Bud Black in terms of the success of the Rockies?
I think Bud Black is fine. I think he's safe. He signed an extension, three-year extension last spring. Dick Monfort, the owner, is incredibly loyal. He'll even admit that he's loyal to a fault. So I don't think Jeff Breidich is necessarily in trouble right now, Buster. But if the Rockies play poorly and if Nolan stays disgruntled, the fact that the Rockies have so many key players coming up on the horizon and the fact that some of Jeff Breidich's free agent decisions have not panned out, if the Rockies are really bad again this year, then I think he will be on the hot seat. But for right now, I think his job is safe.
All right, give me a guesstimate for wins for the 2020 Rockies.
I'm going to say they're going to improve slightly, Buster. I'm going to say they win 78 games this year, probably finish in fourth place in the division.
All right. Patrick, thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster. No problem, man. Thanks.
Alano Rizzo covers the Dodgers for Spectrum Sportsnet LA. And Alano, generally speaking, what's the state of mind for the Dodgers after being shocked by the Nationals in playoffs last year and after the Astros scandal broke?
You know, I think it was a bit of a huge shock as far as that's concerned. I don't think anybody would have predicted that the Dodgers would have been eliminated in the division series. You know, and of course, they were incredibly disappointed. It was one of the harder clubhouses I've actually had to walk into, even harder, if you can believe it, than the two World Series losses back to back. They were stunned. They weren't prepared for that and obviously incredibly disappointed. And then, of course, with everything going on in the offseason, with the allegations into the Houston Astros and Major League Baseball's investigation, they're incredibly angry about what happened in 2017. And, you know, they were very vocal. Cody Bellinger, Justin Turner, Clayton Kershaw to a certain extent, Max Muncy speaking up. And, you know, Justin Turner said, we just want a level playing field. And Cody Bellinger, coming off of his MVP season, was also very vocal that, you know, a lot of people's careers are changed because of this. He cited that Jose Altuve took a, you know, an MVP away from Aaron Judge and went on and on, and they're angry about it. They don't want the title, but they don't feel that the Astros should have it either. That being said, Clayton Kershaw did say that each person is going to deal with it in their own way, and then they'll come together as a team and move forward. And honestly, I think as we sit here on the 4th of March, they have moved forward to 2020.
What do you think the emotional impact is of the trade for Mookie Betts and David Price?
You know, I think a lot of it is that we forget about how good David Price still is and can be. I mean, of course, the headliner is Mookie Betts, and you're adding an MVP outfielder to an outfield that already has an MVP in it. So he's certainly the headliner. We're hoping that, you know, he's not just a rental for this year, obviously a free agent at the end of this season. I do believe the front office would love to be able to extend him. I'm not certain when, you know, they're in talks to do that, but that's a huge piece of the puzzle that you get to a team that already won 106 regular season games last year. I mean, the Dodgers now have three MVPs on their 25-man roster. And again, we're kind of forgetting that David Price is a part of this as well. And David Price, you know, said that his legs were shaking on his spring debut. He's very excited to be with the Dodgers. I mean, there's certainly no love lost there in Boston. He's happy to be in Los Angeles. He's actually happy to, you know, be in a division and a league that a lot of hitters haven't seen him before, having spent his entire career in the AL East. He's looking forward to facing these hitters and actually said he's looking forward to picking up a bat too. So the impact was huge. You know, a lot of fans were complaining the Dodgers were standing pat, not doing much. But again, you don't necessarily have to do a ton when you win 106 games. But when you get a guy like Mookie Betts and an arm like David Price, it's certainly looking up.
You can define the criterion for yourself to this question. The most pivotal player on the team in your eyes?
You know, right now, I think what can be is Corey Seager. And the reason I say that, Buster, is because Corey Seager no longer has any sort of real pressure on him. I think this is a guy who, this is the first time in 4 years he's come into spring training not dealing with any sort of ailments. He's not recovering from any sort of major surgery. This is a guy that is now a person that can just be who he wants to be. He's not someone that likes the attention. He's not getting it right now with the likes of Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger, you know, above him in the order. This is a guy, I believe, if he stays healthy, which is always a question mark with Corey, can have an MVP type of season. You know, a guy that can have 40 to 45 doubles, a guy that, you know, provides some really decent meat and doesn't have to necessarily be at the top of your order anymore. You know, right now that's probably where he's going to be with Mookie Betts leading off. And you could have, you know, potentially Corey Seager in the two hole. You have Justin Turner, you know, Cody Bellinger in the cleanup spot. I really think this is a really big year for Corey Seager to show what he's capable of doing and kind of what people have expected of him his entire career.
What have they seen so far this spring out of two key guys in their bullpen, Kenley Jansen and Blake Treinen?
Well, Kenley Jansen actually did a lot of off-season work with Driveline as far as being able to kind of, the way that he described it to me is open up his hip a little bit more to be able to drive the baseball through the catcher versus to the catcher. And he has the movement on the cutter that he really is impressed by and impressed with. And he also has a little bit of a tweak to his slider that is, you know, obviously that's not his bread and butter, but it is something that he's added to the arsenal, and he feels really good. And again, he's healthy. This is the first time, you know, in a couple of years that Kenley hasn't been held back as far as spring training is concerned. So we've already seen him a couple of times in practice league action when we didn't see Kenley at all, except for one time last spring right before the season started. So Kenley Jansen looks good, and he's a healthy piece. Now, Blake Treinen is a huge piece to the back end of that Dodgers bullpen, signing him to, you know, the one-year, $10 million deal. If Blake Treinen can get back to where he was with the A's in 2017, that All-Star season, that's going to be a very formidable back end of the bullpen. And don't forget, you have Pedro Baez in there, too, who's also seemed to have figured it out. He's the guy that oftentimes gets overlooked, but, you know, upper 90s fastball, if he can figure out more of the pace of his delivery. He's actually had quite a season as far as the second half of the season last year. And this is a kid that people were booing out of Dodger Stadium at the first half of the season last year. So it's, and you have Joe Kelly if he's healthy as well. So there's a lot of different guys that can eat up innings for you and provide some heat at the back end of that bullpen. And hopefully, you know, I don't know that Kenley is ever going to be the Kenley that he was, you know, in 14, 15, 16, 17, but nobody is at that point as they get older and, you know, try to figure things out. But I think this is the first time since I've covered this team, honestly, and this is my seventh season with them, this is the first time we really haven't had any bullpen holes or bullpen question marks.
The Dodgers have been so good at developing minor leaguers over the last decade. Give me the name of a minor leaguer who might have an impact in the big leagues this year.
You know, I think because we know Gavin Lux is going to be with the big league club pretty much the entire season, it'll be interesting to see where not only Dustin May begins the year, but also Tony Gonsolin begins the year. I don't know that either of them have the opportunity to break camp on the big league roster just because of the amount of arms that the Dodgers already have, not only in the starting rotation, but also in that Dodgers bullpen. And we know that the Dodgers have no problem, you know, having 45 billion different starters or bullpen guys. They're very good at the up and down as far as that is concerned. It'll be interesting to see. I think Dustin May is a little bit ahead of Tony Gonsolin as far as the learning curve is concerned, but I do feel that those guys certainly have an impact or will have some sort of impact in the 2020 regular season.
And before you go, guesstimate a win total in the regular season for me.
All right. Well, I got to go higher than last year, right? So I'm going to go ahead and say, and I don't think there's anybody honestly in the division that can challenge the Dodgers in the NL West. I do think they win their eighth straight National League West title. I'm going to go with 107 wins in the regular season. I'm going to best them by one win from last year. You know, I do think that there's not a single team in the division that's going to challenge them. And I think towards the end of the season, obviously, they'll be getting ready for the postseason. So I do think that there is a Mookie Betts factor as far as increase in wins, but it's pretty hard to beat 106. So I'm going to go with 107.
It's a great team. Alana, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. My pleasure. Anytime. Take care.
Anthony Gwynn works on radio and television under the San Diego Padres banner. And Anthony, how you doing?
I'm well, Buster. How about yourself?
Good. I always feel like I have to tell this story. I call you Anthony because when I covered the Padres back in the day and I covered your dad, you were bouncing around the locker at age 11, 12, and your dad always called you Anthony. So I have a hard time with that whole Tony Gwynn Jr. thing. I apologize.
You know, you're perfectly fine. That is how pretty much everybody who was around, at the time, Qualcomm, they all call me Anthony. So when I run into them, I hear it all the time. So you're all right.
There you go. All right. Most important player in your mind on the 2020 Padres roster?
I think it'll be Manny Machado. I know Fernando Tatis Jr. is an emerging superstar, but I think Manny's going to be the straw that stirs the drink if the Padres are going to be successful. So I think that player is Manny Machado.
Give me the name of a minor leaguer who you think, or someone who is very short amount of time in the big leagues, who you think could manifest for the Padres this year.
There's a couple of them. I'll go with Josh Naylor. He's a guy right now in a competition with Francy Cordero and among some other outfielders in that outfield that doesn't have a lot of time, but certainly has some potential to be a kind of a wild card for the Padres if he can be consistent with his bats.
Fernando Tatis Jr., you mentioned him. From your eyes, what's important for his development as we move forward?
Staying healthy. I think that'll be the most important thing for him. You saw what he could do in pretty much a half a season last year. If he can learn to throttle down when he needs to, which is going to be hard because it's kind of in his DNA to play the style of baseball that he plays. But the most important thing to his development will be being on the field, because as long as he's getting the experience, he is going to be special.
All right. Chris Paddock is working through his innings limitations. How much of an impact will he have this year?
I think he'll have a much bigger impact, and that's saying a lot considering the type of year he had last season. I think for the most part, the reins will be taken off, and he's just one of those guys that's hungry to get better every day. And because of that, I think he's going to have a really big year. It just depends on some of it depends on how the Padres, how much the reins are taken off. And if they're completely taken off, he could have a huge year this year.
All right, they finished 36 games behind the Dodgers last year, and yet Ron Fowler, part of their ownership, has been outspoken about expecting a big year of progress. What's going to be acceptable, do you think, in the eyes of ownership?
At the very least, they have to be in it to the end. I mean, right in the thick of the wild card. Because I think the Dodgers have pushed the gap a little bit wider with the deal for Betts and Price. I think they've widened the gap a little bit. The Padres did their best to keep it close by getting guys like Tommy Pham, Zach Davies, who are going to be great additions. But I think in order for Ron Fowler and Peter Seiler to feel good moving forward, I think the Padres will have to be in it to the very end of the season. Much like they were to the break of last year, they'll have to complete a full season of that.
With that in mind, if they're in a race, how aggressive do you think they'll be before the trade deadline?
I think they'll be very aggressive. I think unlike last year when there were two games out at the All-Star break and they could have made moves, I think they realize now time is of the essence. And I think they also feel like they're in a closer spot than they were last year. I think A.J. Preller will be very aggressive at the break should the Padres be in it.
And lastly, give me a guesstimate on wins for the 2020 Padres.
I'm going to say 85. I think they have a chance to finish above 500. Question is, will 85 be enough to get a wild card spot? I think that remains to be seen, but I think 85 is the number for them this year.
Yeah, and they'll certainly be in the conversation as we go down the stretch if that's what they wind up winning. Anthony, thanks for doing this.
No problem, Buster, anytime.
Dwayne Kuypers, play-by-play man for the San Francisco Giants. You know him well. And I've thought of you this winter. I got to say, Kipe, when Madison Bumgarner signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks, I thought, man, nobody's going to be more brokenhearted to see Bumgarner leave the Giants than you are. How difficult will that be to watch him pitch this year?
Buster, look, anytime we lose farmers as friends on teams, it's a bad thing. And he's about as tough and about as good a farmer, rancher, you know, whatever, that you're going to run into. I'll tell you what, it's going to be a lot different. You lose a really big voice in the clubhouse. And when I say voice, I don't mean he spoke a lot. Just the mere fact that his presence was there, and you know, you weren't going to say anything stupid. You weren't going to do anything stupid because, you know, he would be the one guy that would straighten things out. So there's going to be a huge void, not only what you get when he gets on the mound, but also what he offers in the clubhouse. But I do think too, Buster, that given what the Giants are trying to do with a lot of the analytics, you know, how would have Bumgarner, would he have bought into that? So I think that, you know, maybe it was time for him to go, but it still makes it very sad for all of us.
Yeah, and I think this year too, a lot of what I think Giants fans will be watching for is to see what they get from Buster Posey and Brandon Crawford. What do you expect there?
Well, I think what's happening, Buster, is, I mean, look, Gabe Kapler's got, I don't know, 13 coaches, and half of those coaches are younger than Crawford and Posey. And, you know, Longoria said something the other day in spring training, and he didn't say it to me. I think he said it to Henry Schulman, that, you know, we've got players that are declining only because of age. And if you keep doing the same thing, you're probably going to continue to decline. So I think they're willing to try different things now to see if they can put a pause on that. And I think that's how they're buying into it. And they, you know, it's important that the older guys buy into it. The younger guys have to, they don't have a choice, but the older guys, if they can buy into it, you know, then you got a chance of maybe changing the culture a little bit. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but you know, I expect both of those guys to try to change from what they did last year, whether it's in their stance, whether it's in their thought process, whether it's defensively. I mean, I think they're all now willing to change because they don't want that decline to continue.
What were your first impressions of the work that Farhan Zaidi, head of baseball ops, did in his first year?
Well, you know, he got handed, you know, a tough hand. And I think the organization had an idea of what direction they wanted to go in. And then I think Farhan had an idea of direction that he wanted to go into. And then I think at some point, you know, they had to come together and realize that if you keep running out an older team, then you're going to really run out of wins quickly for a long time. So, he's done a really good job of help restocking the minor league system. You know, with Farhan, it's the land of opportunity. I mean, if you're a 27, 28, 29 year old pitcher and you've pitched a lot of years in the minor leagues and you've done okay, you're going to have an opportunity. And it doesn't mean a Giants organization. It could be from any organization. He is going to give you a chance. They got 40 pitchers in camp. They have 72 players. So that is the true definition of the land of opportunity.
How quickly do you think that the Giants can go through this process? We saw the Diamondbacks in recent years restructure their payroll, trade Goldschmidt, trade Zach Greinke, restock the farm system, and they look to be in a better spot. And what's your sense of how quickly the Giants can do that?
Well, I don't know how many wins they're going to have this year, Buster. I mean, it could be 70, it could be 75, it could be 80. Maybe if they really get lucky and everything works out, you know, maybe they can go beyond that 80 number. But I do think that when Farhan decided not to re-sign Pillar, I think it was the perfect example of how they feel about this year and how they feel about 21 and 22. We're going to win X amount of games with Pillar or without Pillar. And with Pillar, we're not going to find out who the center fielder is going to be in 21 or 22. So that was his thinking. After this year, the Giants will have a good idea who their center fielder is going to be in the future. And I think that's basically a great example of what goes on in the mind of, of Farhan. You know, and I am impressed with him. I mean, they bought Cozart. Basically, they traded for Cozart to take his money, and they got the Angels' number one pick, who they wanted draft in the first place. So, I mean, that's kind of the things that they're trying to do.
Yeah, and with the flexibility, the financial flexibility there, and his imagination, people with other teams think that you know they'll be making progress here shortly. And last one for you: do you prefer Holsteins or jerseys?
Well, you know, look, every time you drove by my dad's dairy farm, it was all Holsteins. I'm not sure I saw a jersey until I was 18 years old. Driving to college in Centerville, Iowa, was the first time. I said to my dad, I said, "What is that?" He goes, "Oh, that's a jersey." I go, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, that's where chocolate milk comes from." Nice.
Oh, but that was your loss that you didn't hang out with jerseys. All right, Kipe.
Well,
thank you.
I like them both. Let's put it that way.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. But first, I encourage you, fair listener, to check out today's episode of ESPN Daily. Alden Gonzalez was on with Mina Kimes to talk about Shohei Ohtani. He's a unique talent who can pitch and hit. You know this, but he's set to do both for the Angels this season. Hear how he can make history. It's ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. On to the tweets here. Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12. Corey basically wants to know who's winning the AL East. Has everything that's gone on with the Yankees and the Red Sox recently caused you to change your mind on who's winning the division?
No, I still think the Yankees are the overwhelming favorite to finish first place. I think the Rays are overwhelming favorites to finish second place. With Sale going down, I do wonder if the Jays are going to press the Red Sox for third place. But it does feel like very distinct tiers. I don't know if you agree with me, Taylor, but that's certainly how I could see it playing out.
Yeah, I think Yankees are still in that top tier. I think the Rays have a better shot than the Red Sox at the moment. And then, you know, the Red Sox will yep. probably be middling there. And then Jays and my O's there at the bottom. So I'm still with
well,
you.
Well, there's a distinct tier for your O's as
yes,
well.
Absolutely.
I think we can pencil them in for fifth place.
I'm definitely taking the under on their win total over under here. I'm going to put a couple dollars on that. I would encourage you guys to do the same. Last tweet for today, Mark Keating at Mark_Keating90 writes in, with all the Astros talk, it unfortunately seems that people have forgotten just how great the World Series was. 7 games, amazing pitching, amazing clutch hitting, the Nats starting the season so poorly, etc. Mark basically said in a statement, but Buster, have you forgotten about this amazing World Series? Does it bum you out that the Astros scandal is basically overshadowed a classic? And would baseball have been worse off had the Astros won?
Oh my goodness. Can you imagine if the Astros had won like this spring? And, you know, cause then the talk about how the Astros had cheated their way to one championship, they'd be, you know, casual fans and maybe other players would be talking about cheating their way to 2 championships. And yeah, the World Series last year was phenomenal. And I think Mike Rizzo, the general manager, of the Nationals, gave voice to this right at the beginning of camp because, as you know, the Nationals and the Astros share the same facility.
Right.
And on the first days of camp, the Astros camp was overrun with reporters who were there to get the reactions and the responses and to hear from the Astros players. And the Nationals had nobody. The defending champions didn't get any extra coverage because they were completely overshadowed by the Astros scandal.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And honestly, we really haven't talked a whole lot of Nats either. I mean, that's just because of, you know, what people are interested in, and we will talk Nats, especially next week in our NL East preview. But yeah, it's crazy. And I know, just from doing a little bit of reading and listening to people going down to the Nats Astros facility that the Nats players, I think maybe more than anyone are tired of talking about the Astros because they are literally right there and it's right in their faces.
Yeah. And I think they're annoyed. I think that they feel like when we talk about, you know, what the Astros cheating costs other players, here's one more thing, right? That the attention should rightly go to the Nationals this spring. They're the defending champions and nobody's talking about them. Now you referenced next week when we have the National League East preview, we're going to be talking with Britt Giroli of The Athletic about the Nationals.
Good stuff today, Buster. Again, thanks for listening to these previews. If you didn't listen to the AL East preview, go back. It was on Tuesday. We have 2 more slated for next week with the AL Central on Tuesday and the NL East on Thursday.
And on Friday, we're going to be talking with ESPN newcomer Kylie McDaniel about his top 100 rank of prospects. So look for that on midday on Friday. My thanks today to Dwayne Kuiper, Alana Rizzo, Anthony Gwynn, Nick Pecoro, Patrick Saunders, Taylor and Troy back in Bristol. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.